Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 17, text number 6. So this chapter is entitled The Victory of Haranyaksha. Udasat Taritam Bhoda
Udasat Taritam Bhoda
Gatayan Ashtabhagane in the heavens were screened by masses of clouds in which lightning sometimes flashed as though laughing. Darkness reigned everywhere and nothing could be seen. So, this is at the beginning of describing the birth of Hiranyakashipu, the two demons from Diti, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. And it's describing that after 100 years of pregnancy, she was giving birth to these twin sons. And a lot of inauspicious omens and disturbances. So I'll just go back a couple of verses and just read those just so we can connect all these verses. On the birth, so this is text 3. On the birth of the two demons, there were many natural disturbances, all very fearful and wonderful, in the heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and in between them. Text 4. There were earthquakes along the mountains on the earth, and it appeared that there was fire everywhere. Many inauspicious planets like Saturn appeared, along with comets, meteors, and thunderbolts. The winds blew, there blew winds which were most uninviting to the touch, hissing again and again, and uprooting gigantic trees. They had storms for their armies and clouds of dust for their ensigns. Today's verse. The luminaries in the heavens were screened by masses of clouds in which lightning sometimes flashed as though laughing. Darkness reigned everywhere and nothing could be seen. Text number 8. Chakrosa Manavadir Udmir Akshubitodaha Sada Panascha Saritas Chukshubi Shuksha Ankaja. The ocean, with its high waves, wailed aloud as if stricken with sorrow, and there was a commotion among the creatures inhabiting the ocean. The rivers and lakes were also agitated and lotuses withered. Text 8. Mahu Padideho Bhavan Sarabo Shashishuyo Nibitarata Nirada Pelerebhyaha Prajanire. Misty halos appeared around the sun and the moon during solar and lunar eclipses again and again. Claps of thunder were heard even without clouds, and sounds like those of rattling chariots emerged from the mountain caves. Text 9. Antagrameshu mukato vamancho vanim urbanam shikhalo lukha tankarai hanedu shivam shiva. In the interior of the villages, she-jackals yelled portentously, vomiting strong fire from their mouths, and jackals and owls also joined them with their cries. Text 10. Sangitavad Rodanavad Unamaya Sirodaram Yamunchan Vividavacho Ugrama Sinhas Tatastataha. Raising their necks, dogs cry here and there, now in the manner of singing and now of wailing. Karascha karushai shataha kulai gnatu dharavatalam karakara rusamataha haryadavan bhutasaha. O Vidura, the asses ran hither and thither in herds, striking the earth with their hard hooves and wildly braying. Purport. Asses also feel very respectable as a race, and when they run in flocks hither and thither in so-called jollity, it is understood to be a bad sign for human society. Frightened by the braying of the asses, birds flew shrieking from their nests, while cattle in the cowsheds as well as in the woods passed dung and urine. Cows, terrified, yielded blood in place of milk. Clouds rained pus. The images of the gods in the temples shed tears, and trees fell down without a blast of wind. Ominous planets such as Mars and Saturn shone brighter and surpassed the auspicious ones such as Mercury, Jupiter and Venus, as well as a number of lunar mansions. Taking seemingly retrograde courses, the planets came in conflict with one another. Purport. The entire universe is moving under the three modes of material nature. Those living entities who are in goodness are called the pious species, pious lands, pious trees, etc. It is similar with the planets also. Many planets are considered pious and others are considered impious. Saturn and Mars are considered impious. When the pious planets shine very brightly, it is an auspicious sign. But when the inauspicious planets shine very brightly, that is not a very good sign. So here we see many different types of inauspicious omens. Many people, you know, all over the world have superstitions where, you know, they believe that something happens and it will bring bad luck. So that's quite common. But, you know, in general, this is an actual science which is not understood. So people understand that, you know, perhaps it comes from, you know, the grandparents or, you know, somewhere back that, you know, they wouldn't do this on a Tuesday. I get that a lot because the ceremonies I do, you know, people say, oh, we don't do this on a Thursday or what have you. And it comes from way, way back. Someone's grandmother, great, 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 great grandmother, someone did something, and from then it stuck. And it'll go on forever. And Prabhupada tells an interesting story in that regard, that about the wedding party, that one girl was getting married, and she said to her niece, when I get married, can you get the cat, put it in a basket, because I don't want the cat getting on the table, eating all the food at the reception. Niece when the niece grew up and she was getting married, she said to her niece, "I'm getting married. I'd like you to get the cat, put it in a basket," because she didn't necessarily say why. So the niece did that. That niece grew up. So at this stage, that niece just thought it's part of the wedding ceremony. It's what's auspicious. So she called her niece in, getting married. "I want you to get the cat, put it in a basket before I get married." And the niece said, "But we don't have a cat." And so her auntie said, "I'm not getting married without a cat in the basket." So there's a lot of that. In the West, and every culture has that. But there's an actual science. Now, one may think that, we're devotees, we're transcendental. These things have, what's auspicious, what's inauspicious has no relationship with us, which, to some extent it needs to be discussed. But to some another extent, it's not quite correct. It's not correct at all. These things are in the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam is really the source of the essential knowledge that one requires in Kali Yuga. If you understand the Bhagavatam, you are thoroughly educated, properly educated. So this is part of the education, and the main people who are being educated by this from the Bhagavatam are the devotees. So if it's not for the devotees, who is it for? These things are in the Bhagavatam for us. And to give a couple of examples about diamonds.
Some moments.
What's that? Some moments.
Yeah, that action is coming.
Is that thunder? Reminds me of last week, someone from reception, I'm not sure who it was, they texted me, said some lady wanted to do a ceremony, it was last Wednesday, someone texted me before that, for a little baby just a couple of months old. Anyway, I looked at the ditties and what have you, and I said, who has suggested that date to them? Because it's inauspicious. So I generally try not to bring babies out on inauspicious days. And the receptionist was working with the people, so the receptionist was actually booking the ceremony, and then I was just supposed to turn up. So I said, I'm not going to do a ceremony on that day. So you can get them to call me and I'll organise another day. I don't know whether, I never found out whether someone did that ceremony for them or not. Anyway, that was the day we had that 39 degree heat in the last week. And the ceremony was for the evening. And this wind just come in. And it was so powerful that the Princess of Tasmania, the big ship which was in the harbour there, smashed into the wharf and was damaged, millions of dollars worth of damage. Very inauspicious, and people have been bathing. I watched on the news, they just went flying. Everyone, the whole beach was full, and then they just all deserted, it's like sand in their eyes. So very inauspicious, But there was an indication there, from my perspective, that it wasn't correct. The omens were not correct. So I generally would avoid doing that. I certainly don't want to sit out in the wind with a baby without a tent doing a little ceremony in the evening, especially with some storm going. But Now, Srila Prabhupada, once he was, he was about to leave on a journey, and Brahmananda was there, and as he sort of stepped in the doorway to leave, Brahmananda, who was behind him, sneezed. Because if you're leaving somewhere and someone sneezes, you should not leave. You should go back inside, you wait 5 or 10 minutes, you may leave a little bit later. You know that one? So Prabhupada turned to Brahmananda. And he was like, what was that? I think he said something like, sorry, Prabhupada, I got some, I had a little bit of cold or something. But, so we took it like that, okay, that's not a one-off, in a suspicious omen, otherwise. So he hesitated though, because it was just part of a normal cold or something, he said it went. But otherwise, it was, it would have been an omen. He considered, should I leave now? Wait. And generally, if you wait that 5 or 10 minutes, you may find you've left something really important. So you actually going on a journey, perhaps to deliver a document to someone, and you've forgotten the document. So you go in, you sit down 5 minutes, and then you sit down and you see the document on the table. Oh, good thing I didn't leave. So, even Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he wouldn't travel on a Thursday afternoon or a Kodashi as well. Thursday afternoons are considered inauspicious, from about 3 till about 5, depends on the time of the year. And certain days, species. If Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati the Kaur had to travel on a day which the next day he had to travel, then what he would do is he would have the bags packed the previous day, and he might put the shoes out the front door or even the bags, which meant that he'd actually left at the auspicious time. So I sometimes do that as well. If I have to leave and I think, I can't go earlier, I can't go later, I've got to go now, but it's in a suspicious time. So I've got to leave at a certain time. Then what I'll do is I'll look at the auspicious time and I'll go and start the car, open the gate, put the car out in the street, make sure my things are in there, and then park it down and come back inside. So, it's interesting that even personalities like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, that they would, they didn't disregard these things. At the same time, it's really enlightening to see how a person who is completely surrendered to Krishna acknowledges these things, pushes on with the Sankirtan movement, but at the same time they're not oblivious or say dismissive of these, I have Krishna, what do I care about any of these things like that. Because a devotee actually sees that, as we see in the 10th canto, the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that all the different manifestations within the universe are in fact emanations from Krishna. And we see also in the Bhagavatam that it describes that the sounds of the birds are the whispering voice of Krishna. And actually, one of the mantras chanted at the beginning of a ceremony, you're doing a samskara, you're actually asking the birds to sing loudly and proclaim the glories of the ceremony. In other words, if the ceremony is pious and auspicious in all regards, sing. So, you know, we have a lot more trees, but we have all these trees, we have all these beautiful birds that come and sit. And sometimes just as you begin a ceremony, they start singing. Yeah? They're singing really loud. There are parrots, and then they'll come and sit in the tree like that, and they'll sing. And of course, that's why, you know, trees are very auspicious, certain types of trees, you know, especially when, you know, trees that bear fruits, you know, for the birds to eat. Of course, gradually as the auspicious trees disappear, the auspicious firs disappear, and, you know, gradually we kick it, can't give it. But, you know, if you're doing a ceremony and crows start coming and passing stool on you, the arena, you think maybe Balbala is in the area. And I was once doing a ceremony out here near Tulsi House, and there was someone next door. He used to climb up on his shed and throw things at me. He'd throw all these things, yell and swear at me. And I'd be thinking, oh, you know, Balbala, you know, is here. Yeah. And, but, so here, you know, there's some very, very interesting. I'll just comment on some of these things here. Earthquakes, many inauspicious planets like Saturn, along with comets, meteors, and thunderbolts. So whenever there's an earthquake, or you know, volcanoes erupting, or you know, severe storms, they're considered inauspicious in themselves, and they do indicate that you know, more inauspiciousness is coming as well. It's a very bad sign when there's an increase in such disturbances. There's an increase of misfortune for human society in general, especially in that area. This is one of the dilemmas that I have, that quite often when people want to do a ceremony, they will call the pundit in India and he will choose his star, and then I've just got to go along with that. And but it's actually not possible to do that to some degree if they actually do it properly. But what happens, what I've found that happens, because I've inquired, is that there seems to be like a general almanac or a calendar that they can look up and just look at some of the general factors, the stars and what have you, and say, oh yes, that's, you know, that star, that tithi is fine, okay, go ahead, like that. But in actuality, they don't do a proper analysis of other factors that are happening. So for instance, we say that, you know, the star of Rohini, very auspicious for doing a ceremony. If that star happens to fall upon an eclipse, so this eclipse is coming up in March, September, so the star that the eclipse falls on, that star should not be used for an auspicious activity for, depending on whether it's a total eclipse or a partial, for 3 to 6 months. If there's a star, and on the day of that star, there is some, say in Melbourne, there was some, you know, fire, just like we had fires out in, you know, or some massive storm, that, you know, in Sydney they've had storms and just, you know, bowled over trees, and, you know, thousands of people, you know, without power for days. That star would not be used in Sydney for several months. But in India, they just look on their little calendar, oh yeah, that star's right there. So they have no, you know, there's no concept of actually other factors that may be there, and therefore they're actually choosing a star which should be rejected for a certain amount of time. So these different factors are actually utilised there, you know, if you go back a little bit in India, actually there were common knowledge. A lot of these factors were more common knowledge properly to just, you know, people in general. Most people had a general understanding of some of these factors. Now, as we said, it's all gone to superstition, and the real, science is somewhat lost. That means you don't have to be a mathematician, you don't have to be an astrologer, you don't have to be a great pundit. That the common person can see that these things, which are just readily there, they can see what is auspicious and what is not auspicious. So any person, you know, they're about to leave and someone sneezes or something like that, any common person, they would say, oh yes, okay, let's just hold off, let's go back inside. So, and of course they're in the Bhagavatam because a lot of this information is meant for people in general if they want to hear it, which they can actually practice it. One time I was driving, driving home to Winchelsea. I got to Winchelsea, I had to go to the toilet. Although I live around the corner, I had to go to the toilet. When I got there, so it was dark, it was night. When I got there, there was a tourist bus full of, they looked like, I'm not sure what nationality, but they were definitely Asian. And they were looking up in the sky, and they were looking at the moon. I said, oh, you know, so beautiful, so beautiful. And I looked up, and they go, oh, look up. And I said, oh, that's not good. That's not good. As it describes here, you know, sometimes, especially on an eclipse, but also at other times, when there's a ring around the moon, like a mystic ring around the moon, very definite, it's inauspicious. You ever seen that? Yeah, it's sort of like a misty halo, but very definite. And so that, I said to them, no, that's not good. And I said, what does that mean? And I said, it means that somewhere in the world, there will be great disaster. Anyway, that was a tourist bus. So anyway, the next day, they had that tsunami. That was a tsunami that went through those,
Yeah. 2004.
Yeah. Massive tsunami. It killed, hundreds of thousands of people. It was massive. It went to India and, very, very severe. Very severe. So that was the next day. So, you know, as devotees, how do we use these, indications? Or should we? Should we just dismiss them all? So, actually, they're just a very clear signal. It's just like driving. If you're driving, and say as a devotee, say you're going to a program, you're late, and you've got all the instruments, and the prasad, the spiritual master's grown up. Where's those boys, Where's the prasad? Where's the instruments? You've got to get there quick. So you can't dilly-dally. When you come to the traffic lights, it goes amber. And that means you're in a hurry, not doing anything too dangerous, you can probably keep going. It's not against the law, And you're checking it out, checking the road out, you probably keep going. So if you're in a hurry, okay. Be cautious, because that traffic light means it may possibly be someone just taken off real quick through the lights, and so you have to be, or a pedestrian may just decide to, run across the road, thinking that everyone's going to stop. So you have to be cautious. it's become more dangerous than when there's a green light. But if it's urgent, you can push through. So sometimes these omens are like that. For our Sankirtan movement, the work of a devotee is very urgent. They tend to push forward at all costs, rather than being overly cautious or fearful. They tend to push forward, knowing that the most auspicious thing that is happening is actually the Sankirtan activity that the devotee is performing. So at all costs, they want to push forward that very, very extremely auspicious activity. At the same time, you certainly don't want there to be an accident and all the instruments in the prasadam end up in some, spread all over the road, along with a few injured devotees. You don't want that sort of thing like that. So, in this story, there's something very similar in that, unknown to many of the demigods and many of the personalities throughout the universe, is that there's an arrangement being made by the Supreme Lord for his pastimes. And that the two souls, Jaya and Vijaya, who are actually very auspicious personalities, have actually taken birth, and they're taking birth as demons. They'll take birth for three lifetimes, they'll give the Lord pleasure in his particular pastimes. Eventually they'll go back to Godhead, and in that way they'll enable the Lord to perform pastimes, which are very beneficial. So there's something that some understand, which is kept in the back of their mind. So along with the external activities, there's also a very confidential thing happening. So being part of the Sankirtan movement is like that. We understand that there's something very, very, the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are being performed. So we acknowledge that. It's part of, so we don't just necessarily see the various omens or indications within the universe separately, but we see them in conjunction with that confidential understanding that the Lord's pastimes are also being performed. We don't disregard Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement and just accept the various omens and what have you. Nor do we disregard the omens. We take both. Both. So, therefore, you see that devotees they read these various indications that the universe, which is not different from Krishna, because it's his energy. The universe speaks to the devotee, and that's Krishna speaking to the devotee. So when a devotee gets an omen, because they're actually directly serving Krishna, they can sometimes take it directly as coming from Krishna. What is an example of that?
Vasudeva told him to go to the hippies, Pumpkin Square Park, maybe they will help you. So, Prabhupada saw Krishna in the bus conductor.
The bus drivers again, the Pumpkin Square Park. There you go. Yeah, so he took that. As Krishna speaking to him through the bus driver. Yeah, that's a good example. Any others? There's been some of the pastimes of Prabhupada. I don't know the story of Rukmini, when Rukmini was, she sent a letter to Krishna, please, save me from marrying Sisipal. And she didn't see the Brahma, she didn't see Krishna, she thought, perhaps he's not pleased with me for some reason. But then she felt like twitching or shivering on the left side, which is a very auspicious indication. And that was an indication, and then she felt confident. So she didn't give up hope. So sometimes the devotees, you know, they can be, you know, the job of preaching in Kali Yuga can be quite daunting. And they can get some auspicious sign. And that's an indication that Krishna's about to, you know, keep pushing on. Don't give up. Keep preaching, no matter how difficult. Krishna's about to, you know, he's there with you, he's about to, you know, save you from that circumstance like that. So in that way, Krishna gives you confidence. Another way you can experience that is when something is very, very auspicious, you may think Krishna may not be so pleased. I remember before I was a devotee, that I used to go out with my friends, and although you know, there was no sign of this inauspicious indication otherwise, but it, practically as soon as I got in the car with my friends to go out, because we go out drinking and doing all these other things, the left side of my body would start shaking, my knee would be shaking, because for men it's the opposite. When the left side is shivering or twitching, it's inauspicious. You know, I'd be shaking like this. You know, sometimes like this, and I'd be thinking, you know. But it only sort of happened when I was going out with my friends, you know, to enjoy on a Friday or Saturday night. Otherwise, it didn't happen. Like this, you know. Try and cover up my friend. You're right, yeah. Everything's good. Party! And it actually went on for like a couple of years. A long time. It got me really worried. It stopped the day of becoming devotee.
Hare Bol!
And now I've never ever experienced it again, ever.
Yeah. Hare Krishna!
Yeah. Yeah. And, but, you know, but, you know, there are many practical applications also. So, especially for women when they're pregnant or wanting to have a child, they have to be very, very careful of putting themselves in an inauspicious situation. So, as it describes here, these symptoms are describing that, you know, when many of these, you know, certain, you know, atmospherical disturbances are there, it means that there's a lot of harmful, you know, subtle beings within the environment. This is like here, it describes about these winds, you know, these winds that, they seem like they're screeching, or you know, they're not nice, pleasant. That, you know, there's something harmful, evil, you know, inauspicious about them. I'll tell you a story about that. One time, again with one of my friends, we used to like to wander around in the middle of the night, and. One time we went down to Bushrangers Bay. Has anyone been down there? Cape Shank, Bushrangers Bay. So you go down in the morning to Peninsula, you go right out to the back there. And when I was a teenager, we had this, I had this job as, you know, we built the walking tracks along the cliff tops. There's big cliff tops there, hundreds of feet, very, very high. And down the bottom, of course, you know, on that side, coast, there's waves, big waves, smashed right up. It's a very, very dangerous, very rocky eclipse. And it's called Bush Rangers Bay because that's where the bush rangers actually used to hide out. A lot of people were murdered down there, all sorts of different things. Very wild place, you know. And so people didn't go to Bush Rangers Bay because that's where the bush rangers, so it's very evil, harmful, you know, a lot of bad things happen there. Anyway, because because I knew the place really well, because I was putting in walking tracks and, you know, things for troops. I went down there one night, probably about 2 a.m. in the morning. It was a full moon night, with a friend of mine. We were walking along the, so it was very still night, and we were walking along the track, and there was this particular wind that would come up behind me and push me. So the wind would come up and push me, and I'd stumble forward about, you know, a yard, and I'd say to my friend, "Did you see that? The wind is pushing me." And then the wind would individually push him, like that. So we're both side by side. The wind would individually push me, or the wind would individually, like that. And then there's this, thicket of tea trees, very gnarly, you know, old, very old, and it formed like a complete tunnel. And it went for about, you know, maybe, you know, a couple of hundred yards. So although it was a bright moon, but when you got in there, it was pitch black, completely dark. The moment we stepped into that thicket, the wind started howling and the trees like this the whole way through. And as soon as we got out the other, it was just completely calm. It's just, you know, these... you know, humble spirits there, you know, they're very, and you know, that's why, yeah, if anyone ever goes to the mountains, I always tell them, don't stand on the edge. And the amount of times you see on the news that people look over the edge and a wind suddenly comes up and pushes them over, the amount of people that fall off a cliff, they stand on the edge and they don't expect a wind comes up. Because, you know, you get these evil spirits like that and they just take shelter of the wind. So, and of course, if, you know, when women are pregnant, if they're, you know, outside of the house, in inauspicious, you know, circumstances, there can be subtle spirits, and they will enter within the womb and cause trouble in that pregnancy. So, yeah, a lot of so there's a, you know, there's a practical application here. Here it describes about the she jackals yelling pretentiously, and then you've got the asses, you know, dancing and singing. When, you know, with everything, there's pious, there's impious, there's in between. When impious animals become predominant, and the pious animals that usually keep them in check are subordinated by them, they're very inauspicious. So I watched this documentary in, you know, places where they have lions, herds of lions. Previously, because there was a certain level of numbers with lions that jackals had no chance of dominating over the lions in that, you know, the whole country. Now what is actually happening is that jackals are actually gradually wiping out the herds of lions, you know, as well as the poachers, because they predominate. And they just run amok. You know, the lions, which were previously, you know, able to just control them, they now outnumbered, and the jackals know it, and they very, very confident. So when that, you know, inauspicious animals become very confident like that, and, you know, even crows, who generally, crows are generally very private type of a bird. But when they become very bold, I remember I used to go down to the beach on the Mornington Peninsula, and I spent most of my school days there. I used to wag school, and I changed school. When I went to this new school, I didn't really know anyone, so you know, at the beginning, and I just didn't really, I didn't quite feel like it fit it in. So we spent every day of the year mainly on the beach. I had one friend, which I made in school, and I'd go there, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks, and I'd say, what are we doing like this? And he'd give me his work, and I'd copy, and I'd turn up the exam. I actually passed that year, although I never went. I did really well. Anyway, but you never got crows down the beach. You got seagulls, right? Generally, you know, you go to the beach, you don't see crows. You see seagulls. And like that. Now, the crows are getting down there. See, you know, that's, you know, when inauspicious birds become more bold and, you know, going to places where they generally wouldn't go. It's, you know, it's these are omens and signs of changing times. I'll just explain one more thing and maybe we'll get a few questions, but here that today's purport, text number 14, that ominous planets like Mars and Saturn, they shone brighter and surpassed the auspicious ones such as Mercury, Jupiter and Venus, as well as a number of the lunar mansions. The lunar mansions are the nakshatras of the stars. And taking seemingly retrograde courses, the planets came in conflict with one another. So retrograde course of a planet means that from our vision on Earth, it sometimes appears that they're going in reverse. So it's just apparent. But in respect to other planets, they appear to be going in reverse. In Kali Yuga, what you see is that you don't get a lot of big windows of where the auspicious planets like Venus and Jupiter, Mercury, are able to, you know, when they're, as it says, very effulgent or very luminous means that they're very close to the particular part of the zodiac where they're exalted, certain signs. And what happens is quite often when an auspicious planet is well placed, there are so many inauspicious planets that are blocking that. You know, you see that astrologically. And so it's like the lions and the jackals playing out in the heavens. It's the same thing that you see, you're trying to find some auspiciousness within the planet, and you know, it's a lot more difficult because the inauspicious planets are like the jackals, they're just sort of blocking, you know. Which in previous ages, you know, that would be, you know, the whole time clock of the universe is just slightly adjusted because there's, you know, slight shifts in the movements over thousands of years, things change. So, you know, that's what's happening. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. So, (clears throat) It's, you know, what happens is Krishna compensates, in a sense. So, you know, you see, for instance, with they train you know, animals that, you know, if they do something, they get a treat. If they do something else at the wrong time, they get the electric shock or something like that. In a sense, Krishna gives us all some indication. You know, it can be some very, very simple things. Can be, you know, I've just upset my husband. I don't like to leave the house, but I've just upset my husband. Can be like that. So they can be just very simple things, but you see that, you know, if you're conscious, because we say Krishna conscious, and to be Krishna conscious, first we've got to be conscious. If we're just aware and alert, because our mind is controlled, our senses are controlled, then, you know, we tend to, you know, lock things in. You know, good and bad indications where we feel that Krishna may be showing us something. And over time, of course, we get a general idea. I mean, the Bhagavatam is filled with so much knowledge. So in the course of time, if we just read the Bhagavatam, you will know everything you need to know. It's all there. You don't actually have to be an astrologer or a pundit or a brahmin or a sannyas or anything. You just have to read through the Bhagavatam, and there's so much there. It's a wealth, it's a treasure chest, so much knowledge. You know, what always surprises me is that, you know, when devotees always ask questions about, you know, how, you know, what do we do about astrology and omens and things like that. And I think, but the Bhagavatam's full of it. Why do you ask me that question? You know, it's like, the Bhagavatam is, you know, filled with so much information, and it's sort of like asking, why are you interested in that? Because I've never heard it before. And I think, so try reading the Bhagavatam. But if we read the Bhagavatam, there's so much there. It's unbelievable. Practically, if you read the Bhagavatam, you'll become a professor. You know, there are people all over the world who get paid, some of them, millions of dollars for a little bit of trying to help people to, you know, see signs and omens and things like that. And the knowledge that we get from the Bhagavatam reveals that mostly, you know, all these people are nothing but cheats. There's so much practical knowledge there. So, through the Bhagavatam. But as we're going along, Krishna also, he directs us. So, for instance, this happens to me a lot, is I may perceive something that I think is some sort of an omen, good or bad, and it's connected with an incident. And then I'll find that in the Bhagavatam. I just happen to be reading, and I'll come across, and Prabhupada will talk about that particular aspect that I've seen in nature. And I can understand that Krishna, you know, which is the thing about the Srimad Bhagavatam is you may think that I need to read all 12 cantos in order to then understand the science, but not even that. You know, if you're actually just making an endeavor to just read a verse each day, and then what Krishna does is he, because the Bhagavatam is Krishna, so we're talking about indications from the universe, right? So strong wind, Krishna is telling us. That's all, you know, like something very inauspicious. You know, a storm comes through, knocks down all these trees, or trees start falling down. It says, you take that as something significant. Otherwise, it doesn't usually happen. It's something bad, it could kill people, but it only happens when there's something inauspicious. So Krishna is saying, you take it like that. So, in this way, we're actually looking at the universe and we start to see the super soul within, you know, speaking. But even more clear than that is actually hearing from the Bhagavatam directly. See? Because there you've got, you know, written sentences. You know, we may see some indication, and we're like, that seems to be very inauspicious. And then if we read the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, yes, that's very inauspicious. Avoid things that, you know, if you're susceptible for a pregnant woman or what have you like that. So just in black and white, you know, plain English, it's actually very clearly stated. So, in other words, Krishna will somehow or another allow you to hear that particular purport or that particular sentence of the Bhagavatam at the time you need to hear it. You know, sometimes I've done that someone has asked me a question and I've wanted, you know, I thought, I don't know. It's somewhere in the Bhagavatam, somewhere in my readings over, like, you know, nearly 40 years, I read that, but I don't know where it is. And then I'll go home, I'll pull a book out, I'll flick a page open, and there's that sentence. Krishna's just talking to me. You know, it's not an ordinary book. So the most clear indications that we get is from the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. So, and even if you're not a scholar of the Bhagavatam, if you're just generally going through it and chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna will organize for you to hear exactly the part of his teachings which you need to hear at the suitable time. And that's how we take the Bhagavatam class in general. Like we're hearing this section of the Bhagavatam. There's a certain, you know, group of devotees in this part of the world that is hearing this section of the Bhagavatam. It's never accidental. You know? Although we go through the Bhagavatam, verse after verse, but still, it's the people that come and hear, you know, that on that particular day, that is arranged by Krishna. And it's no coincidence. And whenever we hear the Bhagavatam, we should take it like that. Krishna made that arrangement for me to hear that. You know, that is something which is important for what I'm doing in life or where I'm going. I have to try and understand. Krishna's actually speaking to me. Whenever I, you know, if I jump into someone's car and they're listening to a lecture, well, Prabhupada says, while I jump in their car, I take it, Prabhupada's talking to me personally. Not that, he's listened to that, you know, that's the sort of thing he does. Mm. If I sit down with someone and they're reading a part of the Gita or what have you, I take it that Krishna's speaking. So it's very, very easy for us because, you know, it is Krishna, it's personal. Everything's personal for the devotees. Yeah.
I like that point that a person who is educated in Srimad Bhagavatam is really educated.
Yeah.
Sure. Because we see that today one of the greatest PhDs, and they just fools and rascals.
They have no education.
Because they their life is a mess, they're drinking, smoking, they're basically degrading themselves by these activities, and then their degree is like decoration on a dead body.
That's right. Or, I heard this morning, as I was coming here, I heard a lecture. It was actually necessary.
Go on.
I have to do it. The example that Prabhupada gave, it was in a Krishna book, the education is like the jewel on the head of the serpent. That's another example, that was also a good example. But, you know, when I heard that, it just sort of some things, you know, that just really knocked in. Because a serpent is inauspicious and really, after all, they're just a snake. And even if they have a beautiful jewel, one may think, oh, that's different. That's a whole different story. Here's a snake. It's got a jewel on its head. It's just a snake. And a person with a materialistic education is just a rascal. And their education is no better than the jewel on the head of the snake. Yeah.
There you go. I wanted to ask you one question. You said we should see everything in the context of Lord Chaitanya's spreading the Sankirtan movement. Mm-hmm. How do we see ISIS in that context? This Islamic.
Yeah. Well, look, I guess to sum it up, one of the things a devotee who wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada asked about astrology and what have you. And he, you know, about destiny and things like that. So everyone wants to know about their destiny. Will I do this? Will I do that? Prabhupada, you know, there was a couple of comments. One, he said, you have one destiny with Krishna, and you have another destiny with material energy. If you surrender to Krishna, then you have that destiny with Krishna. And he said, if you give up your devotional service, that which is in your astrological indicator, you get all that back. And but another letter he said, whatever your past, because sometimes people like to go to India, they look at the Bhrigu Samhita, what will I do, what have I done in my past life, what will I do? He said, whatever your past is predicted, whatever your future is predicted, just take advantage of the auspicious opportunity of Lord Chaitanya's movement right now. I really like that one. Because, you know, an astrological chart is based upon your past, and according to that, it prescribes a certain future. Prabhupada says, apart from that, if you take advantage of the auspicious opportunity that Lord Chaitanya is giving you right now, then, you know, don't miss that opportunity. In other words, that was one of the things Srila Prabhupada didn't like about devotees delving into destiny, either past or future. That's what he didn't like, is that in general, if someone does that, even devotees, they may feel, this is my past, this is my future, and forget to just take the opportunity that's there, right in front of them now. That was the danger that Prabhupada saw. And that's why, you know, he was generally quite dismissive of things like astrology, you know, for devotees. He didn't want to, you know, he really just, you know, in general, you understand that there is such an auspicious omen. You know, we're looking for auspicious omens. Can I see any auspicious omens? Oh, Krishna has appeared in the form of the deity. There's Tulasi Devi. There's so many beautiful devotees from Vaikuntha. They're chanting in the holy names. There's Srila Prabhupada's birth. I can see so many auspicious omens. What a wonderful day I'm going to have. And then, so in other words, we get so absorbed in other things and miss that, the main thing. That's what he didn't want. So if you capture the main thing, then you can apply the other aspects of your destiny and what have you to the main thing.
What about ISIS?
ISIS?
Just say something plain about ISIS.
Well, to me, they're, you know, the influence of Kali, you know, Durga Devi has, know, her form of Kali, where she actually kills demons. You've seen, you know, you've seen Kali, and she has the necklace of severed heads, and you know, it's all in black and what have you. So very, very ferocious. But actually, it's a good question, because it's one thing I wanted to mention, that you know, so such it's a sign of the inauspiciousness increasing in Kali Yuga through, you know, this Kali Bhairava, that people follow that path of life, very much tamagun, and symbolized by Kali. And in the Mahabharata, I think it was Karna, someone asked a question to Karna, I think it was, that can we stop this war? Can we stop this battle of Kurukshetra? And he said, he has heard from the sages, there's this astrological indication, there is this astrological indication. He said, as far as I can see, it cannot be stopped. But these inauspicious omens mean it is a death knell for the impious, and the pious will become victorious. And that's how we take inauspicious omens as devotees. When we see inauspicious omens, of course, on an individual basis, we're just careful how we serve Krishna. But on a mass scale, we're understanding it means it is the destruction, the ruination of the demoniac rule of this earth, to allow the devotees to flourish. See? So in the battle of Kurukshetra, all of those very inauspicious omens meant it was the destruction. How many people died? Millions and millions. That's very, very sad, very destructive, very horrible. Everyone had to live through that. But ultimately, it was the end of the reign of rascals. But for the pious and the devotees, it meant that, okay, after that great difficulty, there will be, you know, this wonderful, glorious age. And so that's how we take all inauspiciousness. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Oh.